All right, I always begin by giving all of you ladies a yasher koach for coming out this evening. The weather is beautiful. Mm-hmm. There's always a reason not to come. You know, when it's cold outside, I say yasher koach achen for coming out in the cold. When it's hot, I can say yasher koach achen for coming in from the heat. And on a night like this, yasher koach achen for sitting down instead of walking outside in the beautiful night air, although I do recommend it after class because nourishment for the body is just as important as nourishment for the soul. And given that we're heading into our winter months, are there enough coffees for everyone? There's people behind you?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Given that we're heading into the winter months, I want to remind you, my little health tip of the week, that exercise releases endorphins into your brain. It's nature's Prozac. And given that we're headed into these dark, dull, cloudy months, I highly encourage all of you, including myself, to incorporate regular exercise, if you don't already, into your daily life, because it really, truly does improve your mood. I should have mentioned that in addition to spacing out, I have a tendency to go on tangents when I'm really tired like this, so I apologize. So, yeah. Oh, okay. Okay. So this Mizmor, this parak of Tehillim, is a parak that we say quite often. We say it once a week. Well, let's start with the less often to the most often. We say it, I think, at a funeral. Don't we say it at a funeral 7 times? Right. Although I couldn't find it in any... I thought so, although I couldn't find it in any sitter or anything. But I might have just made that up. We also say it every week as part of the Shabbos morning davening, part of the special Tehillim that we add before the regular Pesukei Dezimra Shabbos morning. And we say it every night before we go to sleep, those of us who say the complete Kriyat Shema for the evening. So we're going to address today, why is this a parak that we say so in so many different situations, and what's it all about? Okay, so I'm going to start with reading the Hebrew again. You'll notice, those of you who are more familiar with the Hebrew, even those of you who aren't, will hopefully notice that this parak is said in two parts. The first half is for the first 8 psukim, the first 8 verses, and the second half is in the last 7 verses. And here we go. Yosef v'seiter el yon b'tzel shadayit lo nan, omar la'ashem achshi u'mesodati, Elohai etach bo. You pull me to Ka Elefuru Baba Miminecha, Elechaloyugas, Rafeinecha Tabit, Vishilu Matusha Im Tere. That's the end of the first half. Second half. Kiataha Shem Machzi, El Yon Shamta Meonecha, Lotuna Nahara, Venegaloy Krabba Ohalecha, Kimalacham Yitravelach, Vishmachabachal Drachacha, Al Kapain Yisa Uncha, Pentigolfa Evan Raglacha, Al Shachaba Fetan Tidroch, Tirmos Tirvetanin, This is our conclusion. And in davening, we repeat the last pasuk. What's our theme? What's it about? God's taking care of us, right? So we've spoken in the past about God's protection. This adds a new nuance to our regular God's protection. What's the nuance? Never before have we seen such a list of things that God is saving us from, right? Scary things in the night. Scary things in the day. Scary things in the noontime. It's like a Dr. Seuss book almost, you could make of it, right? Oh, you who dwell in the shelter of the Most High and abide in the protection of God, I say of the Lord, my refuge and stronghold, my God in whom I trust, that he will save you from the fowler's trap, from the destructive plague. He will cover you with his pinions, whatever the heck those are. You will find refuge under his wings. His do you know what pinions are?
Here, the talons.
The talons, yes. The nails.
Alrighty. You need not fear. His fidelity is an encircling shield. You need not fear the terror by night or the arrow that flies by day, the plague that stalks in the darkness or the scourge that ravages at noon. 1,000 may fall at your left side, 10,000 at your right, but shall not reach you. You will see it with your eyes. You will witness the punishment of the wicked. Because you took the Lord, my refuge and most high, as your haven, no harm will befall you, no disease touch your tent, for he will order his angels to guard you wherever you go. They will carry you in their hands, lest you hurt your foot on the stone. You will tread on cubs and vipers. You will trample lions and asps. Because he is devoted to me, I will deliver him. I will keep him safe, for he knows my name. When he calls on me, I will answer him. I will be with him in darkness. I will rescue him and make him honored. I will let him live to a ripe old age and show him my salvation. So once again, of course, I disagree with the translation. So here we go. Yoshev v'sheter el yom. This perek is being said by what we can call the boteach v'hashem, the man who trusts in God. Here's our first or second tangent of the evening. What does it mean to be a boteach v'hashem, to trust in God? What's the difference between bitachon and emunah? Emunah is to believe in God, traditionally. That's how we translate it, although we did it differently in our Rambam class. What?
To know.
And bitachon, another word in Hebrew, bitachon is also used in Hebrew for security. It's translation of security. So to know would be yidiyat Hashem, to know Hashem. Bitachon is to trust in Hashem. So what's the difference between having faith in God and trusting God?
Come back to that idea of believing and knowing.
It sounds like one's
in the same word. Yeah.
Isn't it the same thing?
I think it's a little bit different.
It's like trust, no, having faith is abstract. Like, oh yeah, I have faith, God's up there. But it's not like a personal, it's not like your personal God who's like here to do the specific.
Okay, good. Very similar to what Shelley was saying about believing and knowing. Good. What other possibilities?
Trust that whatever he does is the right thing.
Okay. It's hard.
Yeah.
What else?
Believing that God really sees what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Is involved in your actions.
Okay, so which part of that is the belief and which part is the trust? Or is that all just belief? I want to suggest that belief, as we spoke last time we were talking about the Rambam, all the Rambams begin with emunah, right? We talk, well, the formulation that we say every day is Amin Ma'amin, the emunah shleima. I believe with a complete belief that God is one, that God is complete, that God is not bound by time or limits, that, you know, all those things, all the that's. Okay, so we suggested that emunah means I am loyal to a particular idea. I stick with that idea. I believe in it. It's something I'm loyal to and I will not deviate from. And bitachon, I want to suggest, means that just like it's the other half of the emunah, the other half of this faith in God, that since I direct my faith towards him and I am loyal to the idea that he is, then I know bitachon is the trust that he will in turn do certain things to me. He will watch over me carefully, individually. He does what is good for me and what is right for me. All of these are part of the bitachon. The bitachon is more the relationship that I know God has with me, as opposed to the emunah being the relationship that I have with God. But the bitachon, the trusting in the God, the understanding that God will do something to you, can only happen if you first have the emunah, if you first have the belief and the loyalty to the idea.
The bitachon is whatever happens is for the best.
I suppose, or even
that,
if
I am, you know, hit by an arrow in the day or the plague in the darkness, that's also comes with Tova. That's also
right. But that's not what this is saying. This is saying it's not going to happen. Which is, then we have to really. One of the struggles I had with reading this mizmor, and this is why I feel like I'm only half prepared tonight because I didn't really have a chance to look into it, is that the whole mizmor says these bad things won't happen to you if you trust in God. And I'm reading this, I'm looking at it, and thinking, that's not true. And David HaMelech, you wrote this, you know that's not true. So what's going on here? So that's the part that we have to figure out together. But let's really take it through, because I do not like this translation, and you'll see when we go through why I don't. Okay. So this guy who trusts in God, who knows that God is going to take care of him, he makes this statement, Yoshev v'sheter elyon, the God who dwells on high, dwells in a hidden place. Yoshev v'sheter elyon. So here, You see, their translation is saying that it's talking to whoever dwells in the shelter of the Most on High, and I'm saying that he's speaking to God who hides himself, who shelters himself on high. That's it. Okay. But you can look at it either way. So he said, this God who lives on high, Betzel Shakayit Lonan, that God is using his tzel, his shade, to cover those who trust in him. So we have two parallel phrases here. We spoke about parallel phrases a couple of weeks ago. First half, second half, the pasuk saying pretty much the same thing. Omar LaHashem says, I regularly say to Hashem, Machsi u'metzurati. I regularly say to Hashem, God, you are my cover, you are my fortress. You are my machse, you're my cover. Kisui is a cover. And you are my metzuda. Metzuda, like metzada, was named metzada because it was a metzuda, which is a fortress. You are my cover, you are my fortress. Elokai evtachbo. He is my God, who I always have trust in.
Our school translates machsi as refuge.
Okay.
Which I kind of like.
Okay, I would say Mitsuda would be better, though, as a refuge.
Well,
although they
fortress
say fortress.
From Mitsuda, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They also call it Seter refuge.
Right, Seter, though, means
hidden. It's hidden, yeah.
You can go either way. Okay, yeah. Good. So this Botef Hashem is saying this person who trusts in Hashem is making these first two comments. So God is up on high. He protects those who trust him. And then the rest of this section of the first half, I want to suggest that it's a response to that statement, that God is up on high and he protects those who trust him. So the response to it is, he answers him, he said, yes, you are right. He will save you from a trap. We're talking about a trap that's set by a trapper. Did you ever go, this is so appropriate, we're talking about dove hunting tomorrow, right? Are we going to allow dove hunting? Right, okay, but let's talk about other kinds of hunting when you set a trap.
Like a bear trap.
Right, or like, remember Tom and Jerry? You know, I think of Tom and Jerry, and Tom would always set those traps, or Sylvester and Tweety.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those sophisticated
you
examples. I did when I had a TV. I was a child.
No more TV.
I'm just shocking you tonight, aren't I? I watch those cartoons. I read non-Jewish books.
Come to my house.
What do you know? I could come. Thank
yeah,
you. I'll tell you. Tangent number three. I'll tell you. We connected the TV for the World Series, and I became such a Tigers junkie. It was like ridiculous. I'm watching those games on the edge of my seat. You know, watching the pitcher overthrow the third baseman. Like, you're paying $5 billion to do what? To miss? You know, and so I'm sitting there like really into this, and these commercials come on. I'm so happy I don't have a TV. My 9-year-old, who doesn't watch TV because he doesn't have a TV, as soon as the commercials come on, he covers his face. Sabina, I know I'm not supposed to look. I'm so, you know, and they, being, no, it creates a culture of people thinking that that's how they should look and that's how they should be and that's what they should buy and that's what they should have.
I watch
Esther Young Grace. Okay. Okay. I'm busy Sundays. I watch Sarah Smiles on Sundays, 10 o'clock in the morning. So you have this back to our suffering succotash. Thank you. You say it much better than I do. This trap, the trap set for the bird that the bird cannot see. Right? What are we listing here? We're listing fears that are unexpected. The harms that you don't expect are going to come. And fears are never expected. But I mean, a harm, you're fearing something that you can't expect. You know, we've all had these irrational fears where you're driving, especially, I might be striking a nerve here, those of us who have been in car accidents.
Okay.
No, that there's that fear. Occasionally, it'll just crop up out of nowhere. I know I have it, that whenever it gets cold and frosty outside, that first
mm-hmm.
cold and frost of the year, and we had our car accident, both of them were in the snow, and where I'll drive, and just for no reason whatsoever, I get this rush of panic adrenaline, that what's going to happen if, you know, when I switch lanes, and it's completely, you know, just because I was in a car accident before doesn't mean it's going to happen again, and the roads are clear, and it's not like, there's nothing I'm not in a rush and all the, like, nothing, there are no, even if there are no cars on the road sometimes, you just get that irrational, panicky feeling that it's going to come out of nowhere, because when it happens, that's what happens. It comes out of nowhere and you're not expected. So here we're talking about things that are coming out of nowhere and not expected. So you have this trap. This trap is a perfect example, an animal trap. It's laid for the animal. The animal's kind of walking along, you know, whistling its little tune, completely unexpecting, completely not expecting that this thing is going to come up and grab it in its jaws. So you have, so he says, God shall save you. He's giving him a bracha. Yes, hu yatiocha, he'll save you, you who trust in Hashem, mitachya kush, from this trap. From this bird trap. And what else? Midever havot, from this terrible death plague that's going to suddenly come over you. We're talking about things, there are two kinds of sudden harms that are addressed in this pasuk. One is something that's put on by man. The man is setting the trap. Right? That crazy lady is driving the other car. That's something done to you by man, as opposed to a sickness, God forbid, which is something that's coming from God. So here's where I started really having my problems with this parak, to say that God will save you from unexpected harms, be they man-imposed or God-imposed, if all you got to do is trust in God. Okay? The question will get stronger before we settle it. It's not that I've never addressed the question before. I have addressed the question many, many, many times before. As I mentioned in this class also before, being in my position in the shul and in the shuls that I was in before, unfortunately I'm privy to a lot of the private things that go on in people's lives that are not the happy things. Also to the happy things, but, you know, to the difficulties that people experience. So this question for me, I know that, you know, even though I wasn't personally experiencing it, it's ke'ilu, it's like almost personal. It's just your own family who's experiencing these things. So I'm reading this, and it's getting, you'll see, it'll get stronger. Okay. Good question. The Evrato Yashechla. So then we come in Pasuk Zalit, excuse me. The Evrato Yashechla. With his spread wings, he will cover you. Yashechla, the word Yashech, like Shukashka, will cover you. Tachat Knesav Techsha. Under his wings, you will be covered. Here we have the imagery. You see, the whole thing is all imagery, because I think God, even from the first prophet, God doesn't have shade. He doesn't have a body. You know, so talking about the shade of God, that God is my fortress. Is he physically, you know, oh, that brings to mind the the scene from Aladdin. We're really into Disney tonight. The scene from Aladdin when he first meets the genie. And the genie, I don't know, the cartoon Aladdin, and the genie comes out of the bottle and shapes himself into all these different things, you know, and it's like, you can see Hashem, you know, Hashem is my mitzvah, Hashem is, you know, the bird with his wings. So it's the imagery of it, it's not the actual, just letting you know, God isn't a bird. So he's going to cover you with his, you're supposed to sort of chuckle at that, God isn't a bird. Okay, thanks. We'll pass that. All right, so he's going to cover you with his wings.
Right.
Well, it's not the imagery of God. The imagery, you're not going to have the imagery of God being in that shape, but you have the image. Right. So you have the image of the bird.
Of an eagle.
Okay.
Usually in a comparison.
Okay, you're going to laugh at me again, but really when I was reading it, I thought of Big Bird, who always covers his head when he goes to sleep with his wings. No, really, he does. He goes, the class isn't usually like this, and usually much more awake and less on these.
Okay.
Thanks. tell them to come back next week. Okay. So this text is really is comparing this Boteach Hashem, this one who's trusting in Hashem, to this little chick that the mother bird is covering and protecting with her wings. Tina v'shelcheira amito. That his he continues in saying that his Hashem's promise amito is his truthfulness. His truthful promise to watch over those who trust who trust in him, they'll behave like a shield. They're going to act like a shield for a person. They're going to surround a person, completely absorb the arrows and the stones the enemy shoot towards them. So this trust in Hashem is going to become his armor. So you have, again, in one pasuk, you have the beginning, the imagery of the bird protecting her young, covering her children. Evidently, I didn't know this, but evidently this is what birds do with their chicks, that they cover them with their wings when they go to sleep. Is that true, or was just
a behavior at work? They we had a dove baby who nobody saw for 3 weeks. It was covered.
It was covered under.
Yeah, the parents would take turns.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I mean, like, and it popped out fully grown.
Wow, that's really something.
So they.
It's similar to the penguins. The penguins do that too. Do you see much of the penguins? I know a lot of movies. Yeah. All right. Well, it was a documentary, okay? It was.
No, that's
I wanted
to see. My husband
would
go with me.
Oh, I rented it on a DVD. No, I didn't show it to my little kids. There's a lot of stuff I wouldn't know.
Okay.
Yeah, but it was not a cartoon. It was a real. But the eggs and the chicks are because it's freezing up there in the Arctic. They're really under. The penguins, literally under their bodies, they have like a sack that covers them, you know. So it's that imagery. And then you have the end of the project, the imagery of the armor, the soldier being covered with armor. It's like so juxtaposed. Next question, hey, number 5. Lo tirami pachalaila. Don't be afraid for any fear of the night or any harms that come in the night.
Don't be really afraid.
Not only do I have to be afraid of the harms that come at night, and I will tell you quite honestly, that is one of my biggest fears. I am afraid of the dark, and I know that it's irrational. This is, again, one of those irrational fears of something unexpected coming to you. It's a completely irrational fear. I know that there's nobody living in my basement, you know?
And thunder and lightning.
When I was 15, I know you're afraid of thunder and lightning. Yeah, when I was 15, my mother used to get Good Housekeeping, and I read the novel in it once about a man who was living in somebody's basement secretly and would leave little dead chicks and bones of mice there for them and everything. So since then, since I was 15, I've been somewhat afraid of dark basements. We have in our house the light for the basement, for the entire basement, the light switch is at the top of the stairs so that I can come up from the stairs with the light on in the basement and turn it off when I get to the top of the stairs. So it's a real irrational fear completely, and I'm a very rational, intellectual person, you know, and we all have these irrational fears. So don't be afraid from the pachad laila, he said. Or necheitze of milman, we have the juxtaposition. Or from the arrow flying during the day. An arrow flying during the day is much scarier than an arrow flying at night. Why?
You can see it coming.
No. Not you can see it.
They can see
you. They can see you. In the middle of the night, they can't aim as well, except now with night vision goggles and whatever. We were just talking about at the Shabbos at the table this past summer in Lebanon that there were many instances in which our Israeli soldiers did not have night vision goggles, and the Hezbollah did have night vision goggles, and it really puts you at a disadvantage. I would call that a chet ya'uf yomam. That is also a pachad laila, you know, a fear in the night of this. Arrow flying that they can see you and you can't see them. He continues in the list of things that God will save you from. Nidever be'ofel yahaloch. Don't be afraid of the deber, of this plague that is walking, that is yahaloch, that is walking in the afel, in that darkest, darkest part of night. Don't be afraid of it at all. There are those who say that this is talking about, like the arrows from the previous pasuk is talking about things that are sent by men. This pasuk is something, deber is a plague, is a sickness, again, something that's coming from God. The Midrash says that deber is another name for the Malach HaMavos, for the angel of death also. You also shouldn't be afraid, from this deber, this plague that's walking around at night, or miketev yashud shaharayim, or from this deathly blow that completely destroys during noontime, during the darkest part of the day. Because what's going to happen in Zion? Yipol mitzicha elech. 1,000 enemies will fall from your side. Urivavani minacha, and tens of thousands of enemies will fall from your right side. Also, you know, just from your side. It could be speaking specifically of the enemies that are referred to in the previous Pesukim, or just general enemies. Elecha lo yigash. They will not reach you. These enemies are going to be attacking you and approaching you. They will fall down beside you at night. It's not in it, but the yikol means it, he will fall, referring to either your actual enemies or the enemies that are in the previous psukim. I'm going to suggest, when we finish going through all the translation of it and the progression, I'm going to show you a gemara that's going to give you a suggestion about what these enemies are. That will really blow you away. Okay. Well, the gemara has a not-so-everyday answer. Yes, as a possibility. Pasuk Chet, number 8. Rak be'enecha tabit. You will only see the enemies with your eyes, meaning you are not going to feel them. You will see them with your eyes, but you won't feel them at all. What are you going to see instead? All that you're going to see is the justice that's being performed on these rishaim, on these evil ones, either the complete destruction or whatever they're supposed to get. So this goes half fashion, this one who trusts in God, that's all he's going to see. That's the end of the first half. Okay? The one who trusts in God makes a statement. The one who's listening responds to him and says, yes, you are correct. I second the motion. God is great. God will save you from A, B, C, D, E, F, G.
Are they talking about anybody specifically?
You always ask that question.
Mine is just
I'll tell you, the Mepharshim say that this parak was written by Moshe Rabbeinu. That it was not written by David, but it was written by Moshe.
Mm-hmm.
Moshe found it afterwards. This is the parak. The parak starts right before this. Tfilah le Moshe Isha Elohim, which we say also in Shabbos Avening, right? And it begins a series of parakim that have no author attributed to them. It doesn't say le David. It doesn't say anything like that. So the Mefarshim explained that all of those parakim, I don't remember exactly how many it is, but that they were all written by Moshe Rabbeinu, and that David found them. And he included them. He was like the editor of Sefer Tehillim more than the author. He wrote them. He took them from other people, and that this is said by Moshe Rabbeinu, which brings a whole other dimension of understanding to it. Right.
Yeah.
But we're going to approach it for now as the everyman.
According to the art scroll, there's 10 of them.
Okay, 10. Yeah, I just didn't, I didn't count them. I have it behind me also, art scroll. Actually got it, Rashi.
I'm saying that David drew upon other psalms, whatever the Hebrew is, besides Moshe.
Right. Yes, he did. He did. He did from a bunch of them. There are actually 11 from here, from the one before it until from Tzadi, starting from Tzadi until Kuf. Aleph, I think it is, until 100, and that begin that had no, yeah, Le David means more. Because Aleph begins, Le David means more. So the ones from 90 through 100, that's 11 Mizmarim, were all written by Moshe Rabbeinu. Even Ibn Ezra also says that Moshe wrote it. And Radak explains that Moshe wrote it, and David found it, which adds to the whole traditional non-time-bound aspect of Sefer Tehillim.
So is he directing it to anybody in particular?
What?
Is he directing this to anyone in particular?
I don't know. I didn't get that far in my preparation. I didn't over-prepare this, so I can't answer your question. I'm sorry. But I'll check it after, okay? If you stay after, I'll look and see what it says, just quickly, okay? All right. Okay, so now let's just focus on it as the everyman. So we start in with the second half of it. He goes, half Hashem, the one who trusts in Hashem, makes a statement again. Ki ata Hashem machsi, you Hashem again, you are my, what did you say, my refuge. Okay, you are my refuge. Elyon shamta me'onacha, you put your dwelling place way up high. It's returning back to the theme that was presented at the very beginning of the parak of Yoshev b'Sefer Elyon. That's why there's a lot of parallel language in the second half and the first half, which is why we say that it's cut into half, into two things. Elyon tan tamnacha, melnacha, you have put your dwelling place on high. Lo tuna elacha ra'an, here we have the response to this person who made that statement of God. So now we have the response to him, lo tuna elacha ra'an, no bad should happen to you. No bad will happen to you. Venega lo yikrav lo alacha, no harm should come close to your tent, your family. Why ki malachav yitzavelach? Before the protection was in the form of the bird wings and the armor. Now it's the angels. Ki malachav yitzavelach. When I was at Camp Sternberg, they sang this song that began with these words, ki malachav yitzavelach. Vishmacha b'chol zirachacha. It was a whole, I just remember that it just passed into my head. That's actually, it's just how it happened in my head. I've been singing it since I decided to do this. But I don't know who sang it, who originally, so I don't have the copy of it. I do have a tape copy of it, but okay, whatever. Okay, lo tunai lachara, nothing bad should happen to you, nothing bad to your house, kima chavita da'ach, because God will tell. You have specific angels who are pointed over you, and God will tell those specific angels to take care of you. Ki malachav yitzavelach. He will take his angels and put them on you. Lisa, you have the malach axe. That's your malach. Malach, your job is to take care of Lisa and make sure nothing bad happens to her.
Does that mean that every person has their own malach?
So it's all, only the boteach b'Hashem. That's why I use Lisa as an example. What is he going to tell this malach? Lishmorcha b'chol zrachacha. Until now, he said that nothing bad should happen to your house and to your family. Now he's going to watch you. Where is this malach going to watch you? On your ways, wherever you go. When does our neshama take a trip? And every night. Right? Lishmorcha b'chol zrachacha, to watch you on all of your ways. I just added that in. It was good, right? Every night. Okay. What are the two main troubles we have on the road? Traffic and wild animals, right? Okay. Traffic. Al kapayim yinsa unsa. Why is there traffic on the highway?
Wild drivers.
Wild drivers are the wild animals. Why is there traffic on the highway? There are two reasons for traffic on the highway. Construction or, God forbid, an accident. Right? Construction. Why do they need construction on the road?
To keep it safer.
Right. Do you remember when I gave birth to Patachia a year and a half ago, my sister came and she was driving me to the pediatrician's office. And she was driving. We took the road off of, to go from 696 onto Telegraph. There was like, we were on Northwestern for like 30 seconds. She's driving at like 15 miles an hour. She's petrified. She's going to break the chassis of my car. I don't know what you really, well, how to pronounce that word, but I know how to, okay, whatever. The bottom part of my car, she's petrified. She's going to break it, you know, because remember?
Mm-hmm.
Now, al kapayim yinsa uncha, this malach will carry you on his, right, on his hands. He will carry you. Why is he carrying you? He's carrying you over. So that your feet aren't going to be harmed by the stones in the road. And then we have this really weird thing. Al-Shachal Batretan Chidroch. You will walk over the lion and the snake. By the way, you notice the word peten means snake. I can't help thinking that the word peten has to be connected to the English word python.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same word.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to point that out to you. We had, there's a rabbi in Connecticut. I see his face, his name with an L, Rabbi Haskell. He wrote a book. Anyway, he used to keep a list of all these words in Hebrew and English that are parallel like that, like a granary is a granary, you know, like those kinds of back and forth. So this could be on his list. Right, so python and peten, very, so why are you going to be stepping over the lion and the nachash, the snake, and then later on you're going to step over the young lion, over the alligator. Is that what it says? Tanin is an alligator?
Sure.
An ass. Okay, it's an alligator. Why are you stepping over these? What is the ultimate symbol when you step over it? Yes, because you killed it. You stepped over the carcass. That's the sign of a conquering hero. He steps over his enemies. He kills his enemies. They lie down. He steps right over them. That's what's going to happen, because this malach will completely take care of you, that none of these animals are going to bother you. When they come on the way, when you meet them on the way, these animals, instead of you being fearful of them, you will be able to kill them and step over them. Great. Why is God protecting this person? We went through this whole thing. Why is he? I mean, I told you that this is being said by he who trusts in God, and nobody really questioned that and said, where do you get that from? It's right here in the last few psukim of the parak. Ki vichashak va'afalteu. Since you clung to me. Chashak. That word chashak, there's a word in Hebrew similar to chashak, same word, called cheshak. When you know that feeling that you get when it's really gray and gloomy outside, back to the beginning, and you have no desire to do anything at all, the phrase that you use, if you're familiar with the Hebrew, is I have no cheshek.
No cheshek.
Right. But even in English and in Yiddish, I think cheshek, like, I have no cheshek. It means, it doesn't mean that, what?
Yeah, Yiddish.
Right. So it means, it doesn't just mean I have no strength. It doesn't just mean, it's like, it's different than I have no koach to do it. It's different. It's, I have no cheshek. You know that feeling when you're just on the couch in your pajamas? Like, that's the feeling, cheshek. I have no cheshek. So cheshek, when you have the cheshek is what clings you to God. Because you wanted me. Because you seeked me out. You sought me out. Remember last week we spoke about if you seek God out, he will be there for you. Because you sought me out, Zaafaltehu, I will save you. Asagvehu, I will be for him a miskad, I will be for him a refuge. A strong point, a fortress. I will save him from his enemies. Like, I'm going to take him. I will take him out from his enemies. I will put him in a safe place. Why? Ki yadashami. Because he knew. He knows. Because this person knows what I'm all about.
Because it's that knowing.
He had accepted upon himself. Yes, he had accepted me as God. He knows what I'm all about. I will take care of him. Yikra Amy. When he calls to me, this person, not if he calls me, when he calls me, Yikra Amy, when he calls to me, the Anehu, I will answer him. Why? Ima Anochi B'tzara, I am with him in his pain. I am there with him to do what? Achal Tehu, to save him. The Achabdehu, and to honor him, to give him the honor of his enemies for tramping him down. And I'm going to give him the honor. Orech yamim asti'ehu, I will satisfy him with long days. Ve'er ehu b'shuati. I will show him my salvation. I'll show him what I'm all about. So we're back to our initial question.
Yeah, who is this?
Well, that was my initial question. Back to my initial question before Alfie's initial question. But that's not true. God doesn't save those who trust in him. My brother-in-law, right? My brother-in-law, oh my God, if there's somebody who trusts in God, it's him. He spends his entire day learning with boys who were kicked out of every other school that they went to, learning and bringing them closer to Yiddishkeit. This is what he does. He sat there. He wanted this job so badly, the school wouldn't give it to him. He sat down in the school in the Beis Medrash with a bunch of guys who were smoking, and he started learning Torah with them. That's what he did. This is what he does. He lives his whole life. He says, just get the cheder. He, oh my gosh, if anybody trusts in Hashem, he does. You know, who pays the bills? God will help. He trusts in God. And a year ago, since this is his first year anniversary of his surgery from the brain tumor, not brain tumor, sorry, from the growth that they found on his brain stem. And thank God it was benign. They found that they took it out, but he still has problems.
He's alright.
From it. Listen, it's not easy to have head surgery. There are all kinds of side effects. You know, but you know what he said when he went in? We all davened for him. Right? This entire community davened for him. People were sending, I promise you, people were sending emails across the country. I get emails from people I never heard about. You related to this Walter and St. Helen for? So they didn't even know? Like, really, just people all over the world were saying St. Helen for my brother-in-law. My brother-in-law, he went in for the surgery. And he turns to his wife and he says, you know what, I'm not afraid because I feel like I'm going in with an army.
Oh,
that's what he said.
Wow.
Wow.
Did God save him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He did.
And is he okay?
There are other issues that always come up.
Head is
you know?
It was benign.
It was benign. But head surgery has a lot of negative side effects.
Yeah, but you don't know what it would have been without it.
You don't know what it would have been.
But they're also saying before that, why did it even happen? It was like
exactly. What, he didn't trust in God before? We all know people who are great, Bokhei B'Hashem, who Rachman HaLatzvan, it should never happen anymore from this point on. But they had terrible things happen to them.
So what do you mean?
All the people
all I have to do
listen to us who don't have the strong bitachon.
It happens to you whether you have the bitachon or not.
But it helps us because these people who have the strong bitachon, and I know people in similar situations, may continue with that bitachon many times even stronger.
Okay. And therefore?
I don't know. I view it as a chizuk to the rest of us.
Okay.
I look at people that I know who have this bitachon, who go through all the sorrow, who have this bitachon, whose bitachon is stronger afterwards, and try to use that as an inspiration.
Okay. You know, it's interesting. The Ran, who lives in medieval, I don't know where, but he writes in one of his drushas that natural disasters happen for everybody. Everyone who gets affected, he talks about a ripple effect. The natural disaster, when it happens in that place, it was supposed to affect those people on that level. But it was also supposed to affect all the people who heard about it. There are people who heard of stories firsthand. There are people who just read about it in the newspaper. Everybody hears about it in different ways and is affected different ways. And everyone is supposed to be affected at that level that he was affected at. So it's interesting, very similar to things that happen, you know, that we could take a lesson from that. Yeah, what else?
This reminds me of lightning and thunder and light.
I know.
Yeah. I am.
I know you are. It's God's way of saying I love you.
Really?
Really. He says it loud so that all of us can hear.
I go into the closet and leave the kids out in the hall.
It's a good thing your kids are old and grown now.
But it just reminds me of a speaker I heard on a campus, like conference on diversity, and he was a paraplegic. And he was like one of these like nationally known speakers on the rights of the disabled, and you know, it was one of these like Christopher Reeve multiplied times 100 things that this man had done. And he got up there and he said, you know, people ask me all the time, if given everything and every experience I've ever had in my life, all the people I've touched, all the opportunities I've had, Would I change it? He said, damn right, I wouldn't. Anybody who tells you they wouldn't is a liar.
Right.
So, I mean, that's it. You know, like, who wants to be an example?
Right.
I really don't think your brother, not knowing him, but
right.
I don't think people want to be an example.
So here's what I want to suggest, something that has helped me. The Gemara says that when a person is dealing with difficult times, it has to be, my students ask me this all the time. The Gemara says when a person is dealing with tragedy in their life, he has to be mefashfesh the ma'asav. He has to look into his own deeds. And all the high school teachers teach you that means that you're getting punished for something. And my students who come into me, who have close relatives who have been severely ill, come into my class when they learn this from their teachers and say, what do you mean? My mother, my father did something so bad that this is what they have to suffer? And my answer to that, first of all, is, you know what? In a sort of backwards way. Halavai, we had such a close relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu that it was so black and white, so on and off, you know, that if you do X, Y will happen to you. If you do A, B will happen to you. So we don't have that relationship with God. But my understanding, when I look at the Gemara, that you should be in the fresh face, the Mashad, is that something like that, when it happens, not that you want it to happen, but when it does happen, the way you will be affected by it depends on how you view the situation.
How
you view the situation. There are many people in that man's same position who are paraplegics who sit at home and rightfully pity themselves, wallow in self-pity all day long, and just sit and watch TV and do nothing meaningful with their lives. And right, they deserve that self-pity. You know, that's a really horrible life to have, life experience to have. But when a person is able to then turn around, my understanding of this parak is not that Hashem is going to save you. But whether Hashem saves you or not, your bitachon, I don't know if I can articulate this. Your bitachon in Hashem, your trust in God, is such that when you are irrationally afraid of something that hasn't happened yet, because that's really all of these are things that haven't happened yet. When you're irrationally afraid, if you have that strong bitachon in Hashem, the bracha is that when it happens, that you should go in feeling like you have an army behind you.
Maybe this isn't just like one, because I'm reading it very different now than I did 45 minutes ago. Now that we know it's Moshe. Because maybe it's not just about things that might happen, but things that have happened.
Good. What is his experience with the snake?
With the staff throwing it down. Mm-hmm. It's like the first time, in a sense, he confronts Paro.
Mm-hmm.
And you read some of this like very different about the plague and darkness and enemies falling everywhere and witnessing the punishment of the wicked, and you know carrying you like all of it. You know, when you see it, Moshe, you know, see it for all of these things. You know, you just read it a little differently.
Good. I'd like to turn over the paper for a moment because we only have 5 minutes left. So let me show you the Gemara about it. The Gemara is talking about if a person, the Gemara is based on the Mishnah, just to give you a very short history lesson. Moshe got the Torah from Hashem. He gave it to Yeshua. Yeshua gave it to the elders, right? Leva, you know the whole thing? Moshe gave out Torah Mishnah. Gave it to the king, right? Yeshua. Yeshua passed it on generation, generation, generation. All of a sudden, lo and behold, you have the generation of the Mishnah. You have the rabbis who in the year 200 CE decided, you know what, this is ridiculous. We have this oral law. Nobody is going to remember it if we don't write it down now. So Yehuda HaNasi in the year 200 CE wrote down the Mishnah. The Mishnah is a record of the debates that the rabbis had. And what exactly was it that Moshe got from Har Sinai from Hashem? Then, for the next 300 years, the next rabbis, what did they do? Since now that it was written down already, the Mishnah, they argued about the Mishnah. And those debates are written down in the Gemara. So the Mishnah tells a story, not a story, the Mishnah talks about a person who mistakenly walked into the area of the Beit HaMikdash when he was impure, when he was tameh. And what kind of korban that person has to bring, that he didn't know that he was tameh, and he finds out afterwards what kind of korban has to bring. So the Mishnah said this is talking not only about the Beit HaMikdash itself, but also about any additions that are put on the Beit HaMikdash. And then the Gemara goes like this. It works in the Mishnah also. It works sometimes in stream of consciousness. So the Mishnah says it also applies in places in additions that were put onto the Beit HaMikdash. How would they put on an addition to the Beit HaMikdash? They would come with all the leaders had to agree that these were the new boundaries that they wanted to have for the Beit HaMikdash area. They would expand the boundaries. They would come with song, with instruments, and they would do the special thing with the chalot, they would do all these things. So the Mishnah describes the whole thing of how they would add on, how they would expand the boundary of the Beit HaMikdash. So what does the Gemara do? The Gemara takes this word with song, that there were songs that they sang, and asks the questions, what songs did they sing? And the answer is as follows. Tanu Rabbanan, our rabbis taught, Shir Shel Todah. They sang the song of Thanksgiving, which is Mizmor LeTodah, that we say every morning, number 100. How did they do it? B'kinarot, u'b'nevalim, u'b'chalchalim, on all these different kinds, with all these different kinds of instruments, al kol pina b'pinan, into every corner of this newly expanded area, b'kol evan gazalash b'yishayim, and on every great stone in Jerusalem, every marking stone, and then it would also say another Mishmar, Aramim Khajam Ki Juli Tani, which I would love to do, but we don't have time to do all of them. I will extol you, God, because you have raised me up. That's actually, the Midrash says that that's what Mordechai said when Haman was taking him to the king, you know, riding him around on the horse. The Shir Shel Pigayim, and they would also say the song of, what does he say, against evil occurrences. Okay? The Yeshav, which is our parak, by the way. Our parak is called the Song Against Evil Occurrences. The Yeshav, and some would call it, that same parak, the Shir Shel Negaim, would call it the Song Against Plagues. Man da'amar de Negaim, according to the opinion that calls it the Song Against Plagues, why are they calling it that? Because the Pasuk says, the Negaloi Kabalacha, no plague will come to your house. And he's talking about an actual plague. Umanda anategayim, and those that call it evil occurrences, the yishlong against evil occurrences, dichtiv, because it says, yikol mishikha elef, something that 1,000 will fall from your side, v'yomir, and it says, yoshev v'sheter elyon, that sells, because it's in 1,000 fall in my hand, and that, and then you say, meaning to say that the first half, sorry, v'yomir, what he's referring to when we talk about the shir negaim, or the shir pegaim, if you call it the song against the plagues or the song against the evil occurrences. Either way, we're only talking about the first half of the parak. You'll say the Seychelles, Yom Mitzvah Shabbat Yitzvah, until Ad Kiyatasha Makshi, Yom Tantan Lonecha. And then what would they do after that? Chozir V'Yomer, then they would go and they would say, Mizmor L'Zabib B'chol Pnei Avshalom B'No. They would say another Mizmor, Hashem Arabu Tzarai, how many troubles do I have? Until the words, Ad L'Hashem Ha'ishwal Amcha B'chatach HaSalat. But those are the songs that they would sing. But my concern is this part in the middle. That they're referring to our parak as the song of Pegaim or the song of Negaim. So why are they calling it the song of Pegaim or the song of Negaim? The song of Negaim is that no physical thing should happen to you. What are Pegaim? What are evil occurrences? Says Rashi. Where are we? Pegaim, look all the way on the bottom line of Rashi, those of you who read Rashi script. Mazikin shepogim bivnei adam lahazik. Harmful forces in the world.
Harmful
forces in the world. Otherwise known as shadim. You ever hear of this word shadim? Yeah, Leva, what are shadim?
I've heard a few different definitions of them.
Okay. It's like these, that we live in a world, but we don't see everything in the world. We see each other. And shadim are supernatural negative creations that are around us, constantly trying to harm us. Remember the thing, you know, the sort of the chicken feet in the sand, right? This guy sprinkled sand around his bed, and then he woke up and looked like there were chicken feet around, and there was no chicken feet, and it was shadim. Okay, here's the story of the Gemara as follows. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Omer Lahu Lahani Kare. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi recited these verses when retiring to sleep. But we have a problem. Now, he would say these psukim. Why would he say these psukim? Because this is called the Shir Shal Negayim. This is the song against evil occurrences. Sorry, Shal Pegayim. This is the song against these supernatural evil things that we can't see. So that's why he would say it before he goes to sleep. But the Gemara asked this question. Wait a minute. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is the one who said that you can't use Torah for healing purposes. Did not Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi himself say that nobody can heal himself with words of Torah? To protect oneself is different. Protecting yourself is different than healing yourself. That answers, Estelle, why we say it at night. Aside from what I suggested with the journey that your soul takes. As Mara says, you're saying it for very, right, it's saying for very practical reason. Because there are these forces that exist in the world around us. You know.
No wonder you're afraid of the devil.
There you go. It's not so irrational after all. I know too much, right? I just threw this in. I don't really know what to do with it. Shadim are sort of one of those things that you learn about and you hear about and you, it's important to be aware of, but, it, you know, being that they're supernatural and I only live as far as I know in the natural world, they're sort of hard to comprehend. We're just going to, we're past 9 o'clock already. I'm going to wish you all the feeling this week that you feel God's protection around you, and even if the arrows make it through the armor, realize that whatever you're feeling, if you are the Botah Hashem, hopefully, is not what it was originally intended to be. So I wish you a week of bitachon, and I'll put on the song again, and I'm gonna, I like what you said, Elkie Hanser. But I'm gonna, yeah.
No, I know. I'm very
Oh no.